So Helio takes the 500, Pelot becomes an endorser of fried chicken, and one of the sport's brightest stars could be heading to F1. Totally IndyCar. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. Hey gang, welcome to episode 328 of Motorsport 101. Glad you could join us. Now, as I mentioned on last week's show, we didn't have any of our major series actually race over the course of this weekend. I know, one of the busiest motorsport calendars of all time, and we actually got a week off from everything. Weird. In October, of all things, as well. But, to fill the void for this week, we decided to go back and review the IndyCar 2021 season proper. Why? Because it was damn fun, and it's a good time to talk about it, as far as I'm concerned. So, let's go around the horn as always. First up, RJ O'Connell, hello sir.
Congratulations to Moki Nogiri on winning the 2021 Super Formula Championship. There was racing that happened. Looks like Top Rack Razgatlioglu is probably going to win World Superbikes.
Probably.
Because there's like one scheduled race meeting left, and I don't know how the situation is in Indonesia that's going to allow it. And also, yeah. Kyle Larson won a boring race at Texas, but that's NASCAR Texas for you.
Yeah. We just have to come to accept this at this point, unfortunately. Mr. Larson is inevitable in the way NASCAR is going this season as he qualifies for the final four of the NASCAR championship.
He can't keep getting away with this.
Etc. Also, we have Ryan King. Hello, sir.
Yes, I am somewhat frustrated that there was no racing last week because I had a first weekend in a new job and I had a lot of content to fill up that empty void of nothingness that was happening.
That's right. Yeah. We need to introduce Ryan King by his new title.
Yes, we do. We do. I didn't want to be the one to do it, but I guess as host I get to now say Jalopnik Weekend Editor, Ryan Eric King, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey!
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes! I feel like a proud older brother right now. It was delightful when I heard it got the news. I jumped up and down at work. It was great. Congratulations, King. You get to... Brilliant. Congratulations, my man. How was the first weekend at Jalopnik for you?
It was chaos. It was pure chaos due to a string of technical difficulties behind the scenes, which I will not get into.
You mean there wasn't a group Slack chat for everyone to panic in?
Nope.
King's out here first weekend, firing blind. Love to see it. I love that you're also bringing the boat news to Jalopnik as well. Like you brought in a new audience, and for that I salute you. Oh, brilliant stuff. Congratulations to King. Go read his stuff over at Jalopnik every weekend. It's going to be great. Delighted for him. He's an excellent writer and just all around ridiculously intelligent historical buff, and I'm sure he'll convey that as best as he possibly can on the website. It's going to be awesome. So well done, Ken. Congratulations, man. And we're all delighted for you. I'm sure Cam is too. Even though he's not here, he's becoming a Corvette boomer officially. He's picking up
become a Corvette guy.
So we get to roast him for that next week. I look forward to that. So we have to call in a guest, and we have no better guest to bring in for an IndyCar race review than Chris DeHarde. Sadly, he wasn't available, so we got Zoe Hamilton instead. Hi, Zoe.
Oh, my God.
And Bly.
Zoe, come back.
I will say I will be completely unbiased during this whole thing, she says, while wearing an Alex Blow hat.
Oh, right. Yeah. No,
it's
we don't
the only
merch
you can get. But because
biases?
I did have to...
Me?
No.
Never would have
no.
heard of such a thing.
Unlikely. You know, this... King, if you want to get one of your Yankee jerseys out by this point to complete the joke, feel free.
No, I'm good.
I mean, in my defense, it's also like the only merch you can buy that doesn't cost more in the shipping.
Yes. If any UK fans are also IndyCar fans, you know exactly what we're talking about when it comes to buying merch off their store and the international shipping costs. It's not quite as bad as it used to be, but it's still obscene. Like $35 a time. It's a bit much, to say the least.
It was the advantage of me going to a race.
Yeah, it helps. It helps. To be fair, my proudest cap, my signed James Hinchcliffe one, is a direct result of you being in a race, for that I take tremendous pride in, and my eternal thanks. So, the four of us are here. Also, RJ, our Dodgers are coming for you in the playoffs. I'm going to make this absolutely clear.
I've already accepted that this is going to happen. Nobody is picking the Atlanta Baseball Club to be favorites in the series. Not with 20 fewer regular season wins. Not with Georgia Sports' professional reputation of coming through in the clutch the way that someone comes through with a case of food poisoning as they rush into the toilet. I apologize for making this show descend into vomit humor.
I only mentioned this because RJ has ribbed me about this ever since this series started with me being the Dodgers fan in here and him being the Atlanta. You've ribbed me over every game. I've seen our Discord. Do not try and argue this.
No, it wasn't targeted.
You poked the bear. Okay, I will have my revenge.
I poked the bear and then Cody Bellinger smacked a neck high ball about 500 feet the other way. I'm glad that he's healthy again. There's no cap.
He hates it. He hates it intensely. But without further ado, we'll be getting into the IndyCar season review very, very shortly. We'll be going team by team up and down the paddock. We'll be talking about their seasons, their drivers, some future plans, etc. It's going to be a fun time. But in the meantime, basically, you can find us before we get into all of that. We're on youtube.com/motorsport1. But if you're watching us on there, hi, subscribe, hit the like button, hit the bell for notifications, all that good stuff. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter, motorsport_101. And if you'd like to follow us, our personal handles, you can at Harrison101HD, at RJ O'Connell, at Ryan Eric King, and at Wee Zoe down the bottom. If you need Cam, it's CBuckley917. Not really fair, we give Zoe a plug. Go follow her, give her a Motorsport101 bump from us. Or on Instagram as well, at Motorsport101Pod. You can follow us on there. And if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon. Patreon.com/Motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of the audio episodes we produce, $10 for the video version, and access to live recordings of the show as they go out in the supporters club of our Discord server. And you can find all those details and much more, including our written content as well, on our website, motorsport101.com. Check that out if you haven't already. Right, without further ado, let's get into the IndyCar season review. Okay, everybody, let the good times roll. So we're going to go team by team here as we go up and down the grid. Largely from the back to the front, we get to the big teams at the end, roughly. It's a bit of vibes overall. We'll go at a little bit of a brisker pace with some of the smaller teams that haven't got too much to talk about. As we go, we'll have a conversation. Now, top of my list when I wrote this up was Carlin. And Carlin was fronted mostly in the 59 car by one Max Chilton. Championship position, 25th. Not great. I know he wasn't in every race. He split the ovals with one Connor Daly. More on him in a bit. Just the one top 10 finish all year. Now, when we were planning this, a certain host on this show insisted to take the microphone first. I'll give you a hint. It's none of the blokes. Zoe, the floor is yours.
Chilton has been bothering me for a wee while since he went to Carlin, and I could never quite put my finger on it until this year at Nashville, when he'd done an Insta story in regards to results and then went, "We're a one-car team that doesn't get to do any testing." And it was then I was like, "But you're the driver. Where are you when there's not a race on? The UK?" And it's like, he missed the race. He missed the Indy GP because he messed up with his timing for trying to come over. Because he had, honestly, he's a good driver. I won't deny he's not a good driver. But the way he looks at IndyCar, it's a holiday. Because you also had, I think when they were in Chicago after the Indy 500, and he posted about his hotel. And again, it was like, this hotel is so much nicer and so much cheaper than the one I had at Indy. And it's like, you're booking a hotel in Indianapolis during the month of May. And you're surprised that the hotel was expensive.
Mm.
I think when he initially came into the series, he did genuinely want to do well. But it's now clearly hit a point that it's just a thing he gets to do. He gets to spend some time in the sun. And then he goes back to England and makes sure his garden is perfectly... the grass is all perfectly cut and everything. I mean, the fact that his partner, who is a watercolour artist, she does animals and she does clouds. And the clouds is... What was it when you found it, King? It was like, clouds in the UK and the American Midwest.
Yes, and I'm like, the Midwest is a huge place, and you've only been to, like, two cities.
Like...
It's far up.
Because you've got, obviously, this year, it's going to come up later, Grosjean. And the way he took it, it's completely different. Again, we've got Sato will be coming up later. And again, how he's approached, especially during these times, is completely different. I think Chilton really needs to have a sit down and decide, does he really want to race an IndyCar? Or does he really want to try and find something in the UK? Or just make sure his garden is absolutely immaculate?
Yeah, it feels like Chilton still thinks it's like the late 60s or the 70s. And he's one of the European part-timers back in the day, where it's like, oh, I could just do, like, Indianapolis, Milwaukee the week after, and then, like, come back at the end of the year and do Riverside. I don't have to be here in America.
Yeah, it's like, the line I put in the script was commitment questions, and that's exactly what it feels like. It feels like Chilton is just here on one big holiday where he occasionally gets in a race car, and, whether he finishes 11th or 18th or 24th, it just doesn't matter. You know, it just feels so inconsequential. He's decided not to race on ovals, and that's fine. That's understandable, given the added danger that they provide. I will never hold that against someone if they don't want to do the ovals. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it just feels like he's just there, just spinning the wheels, and like it just feels like Carlin's just there to make up the numbers at this point. And that's frustrating.
Though, again, I don't fault Chilton for not wanting to race on the ovals, but he drives for a one-car team who want to be in the series full-time, and they only have this one car. The fact that they can't have one driver for the car for the entire season seems absurd.
Yeah.
Should we also mention that Carlin do have a car in the Indy Lights? And the driver from that left before the end of the season.
Yeah.
Alex Pironi left before the end of the season. Their other driver, Christian Bogle, was... suffice to say, it was a learning curve for Christian Bogle. Let's put it that way. This is your Carlin Indy Lights review. I think Matt Chilton and Carlin, whatever the arrangement was before COVID, because I wouldn't fault Chilton for wanting to commute back from the UK to the US, but it's different now. It's different now in these uncertain times, registered trademark. And whatever the arrangement is, or what it was, it ain't working now. Yeah. And they need to go their separate ways. But Carlin may end up living on as part of some other entity. Will it be with Juncos Hollinger Racing? Will it be with some other entity? Will it still be with Carlin, but with somebody else at sea? Probably not. What a disappointment this has been. For Carlin, a team that has been dominant in Formula 2, dominant in Formula 3. They, every other step of the ladder they raced in, they've been fine, except this just didn't work.
Even if
you factor in Daly's ovals, if you look at it from the entrance standings, they were third from the bottom. The only two cars that were worse was the number 06 of Mayor Shank, and we all get to the person driving that car in a bit, and the number 4 Foyt car.
Yeah, and they got a big break because the Leader Circle Championship, as I've said on the show, the rules are, everything's made up and the points don't matter. The points truly don't matter.
Yeah. So it's a mess, and it would be a shame to see someone of the name of Carlin not be in the series, because it is an important name on, you know, in many circles of motorsport. But this doesn't work. This is not working. They are arguably the worst independent team out there in this series right now. And I think
Yukos has an excuse. They are starting over with a brand new workforce.
Yeah,
and when this project started, and they started the lights team, and Chilton was really good in lights, and it obviously made sense because he was in Formula One. IndyCar was a much different place only a few years ago. Things have ramped up tremendously, where Penske don't feel comfortable running 4 cars anymore. We have another 3-car team. The level of competitiveness at the front is so high now that you can't just come in and easily be midfield anymore.
It's a different ball game now, and we talked about it at the end of the season as well. It is a greater time for consistency and quality than ever before at IndyCar, and just being a part-time 1-car team with limited resources and no oval running is a recipe for disaster. And that's what it feels like. And hey, if Jinkos buys out that seat, that's a great name to have back in the series. That would be pretty cool to see. We'll have to wait and see what happens with Carlin. Yeah. No confirmation on that yet, but we'll have to see how they go. Shall we move to a much brighter prospect in the wonderful AJ Foyt Enterprises? Anyone? So, we had Dalton Kellett in the number 4 car, 23rd overall, I believe the lowest ranking of all the full-time drivers in every single race this year. Best finish of 12th. And in the 14 car, in what would be now his final full-time season in IndyCar, at least full-time anyway, Sebastian Bourdais, who was 16th in the championship. Had a couple of fifths, including one back at home to St. Pete, but we've been here before with AJ Foyt. It's just not really working for them at the moment. Again, it seems like a familiar tale.
Yeah. Dalton Kellett, I'm sure, is a very nice and bright student, and he would have an incredible future as an engineer in this sport. This driving thing ain't worked for him. He has an average finish of 21.3. that's lower. That's 2/10 of a position lower than Jimmy Johnson.
What?
Yeah.
Worse than Johnson?
Yeah.
Oh Lord.
Oh man. And he wasn't that impressive in lights. He is a paid driver, and that's pretty much the main reason why Foyt can run 2 cars. This isn't really going anywhere. It's bad.
RJ, connect me. Is Dalton Kellett like the one driver who's like basically, even though he's going up the ranks, he's never actually won a race?
That's correct. I believe he has never won on the road to Indy in his career.
0 wins, and yet he's still here.
Yes.
Oh no! I mean, again, at least compared to Chilton, at least with Kellett, we all know what the story is here. You don't have to read the tea leaves very hard to get what Dalton Kellett is about here. He's a pay driver, simple as that. And if it's keeping Foyt afloat, then so be it. But we're not expecting anything out of him at this point. It's almost a zombie car. That's the feeling that he get right now. But the more interesting thing for me is that we now know that Bourdais will not be racing full-time in the series anymore. I believe he's now going over to IMSA full-time next
year. That was made official yesterday that he's going to be driving for Ganassi and IMSA on a full-time basis. He's going to be running part of next year's schedule with Foyt, and that will be his last partial campaign as things stand, which is a sad way for a 4-time national champion to go out, I will admit.
Oh. Mm. You, like, I've said it before, he's one of the greats in North American racing, as far as I'm concerned, and it's a bit of a sad one to see Seb go out a bit sad on this, especially even more so when it's part-time, because it's just, you know, it's like, hey, Seb's here. Oh, no, he's not anymore. He's in sports cars now.
I mean, one of the things is, what Seb's done with the team, the last time Foyt looked this good was when they had Daly and Munoz.
Mm.
That's the last time they... That's the last time their cars looked this good with Bourdais.
What a nice team that was. It was like, Daly's here, like, Daly's finally got something, and then Munoz we knew was really good, and then they both got cut at the end of the season.
All of that potential ruined, squandered, thrown down the drain, flushed down the toilet, with no courtesy flush.
I thought that Carlos Munoz was going to be one of the greats. He was a contender, goddamn.
One of the genuinely best dudes at the 500. That in itself was worth having him on for a year, because he was an outstandingly 500 driver. Runner-up in the past, and, you know, another day he wins that year that Alex Rossi won on fuel mileage. He was incredible at Indianapolis. That in itself was an asset to a team. And, yeah, nothing. And now it's Kellett and Bourdais probably splitting that 14 car, most likely with somebody else next year. Maybe a third car. There's still rumblings about that as well, but nothing confirmed and concrete yet. I mean, King, you're the Bourdais man. Who do you want to split his car with out of the options available? Like, who are you thinking? It's not exactly appealing, is it?
It's not really appealing. I would hope they go for someone, like, if it's Foyt, I hope it's someone from Lights they pick up. If not Robert McGinnis, maybe. Mm. Maybe. I hate saying this, Devlin DeFrancesco.
King, take a drink. I think his tongue's now on fire having admitted that. It's like an episode of Hot Ones in here.
I've got a name that's come up recently. One-time Formula 3 championship contender Logan Sargeant might be ready to call time on racing in Europe, and he's going to be testing at Barber in a couple days. By the time we're recording this, by the time this episode comes out, he'll have probably already tested at Barber, and he's a prime candidate to take over the 14 car, which has also been shopped around the likes of Tatiana Calderon, now in WEC and Super Formula. I heard Dan Tickham's name thrown out there, but I have heard nothing on that since. And could you imagine replacing Sebastian Bourdais with Dan Tickham straight up?
The one thing that's appealing about him going to that team is how long before Foyt just grabbed him by the throat and pinned him against the wall and went, "Now listen here, you little shit."
Rock bottom! Rock bottom! Yeah,
just like literally in spring training, we're just going to hear rumors. Yo, you heard Foyt punched out that English kid?
this almost 90-year-old man just rock bottom Dan Tickham through the pit box.
Love it or not, I would pay good money to see it. I would pay UK pay-per-view price. Like, forget Fury Wilder 3. I would pay the £25 to watch that fisticuff. That would be fun. Although, my God, like, just the sentence replacing Sebastian Bourdais with Dan Tickham just makes, like, it makes my brain melt just thinking about it. Oh, dear. But, yeah, a lot of names been flying around that 14 car. As mentioned, nothing confirmed on the 14 yet. Seb actually took to Twitter yesterday to basically confirm that there is no news regarding the rest of his car just yet. So, that was fun.
Tatiana probably makes sense to share Bourdais' car, because Bourdais' car was the one sponsored by Rokit, and she's also sponsored by... Yeah, or she no longer sponsored by them.
Yep.
Yeah.
Although, again, the internet will explode from the hardcore junior racing fans if they find out Tatiana Calderon shithoused an IndyCar seat.
I mean, if you're going to test the waters,
it's
probably the best seat for her to go to, because
Yeah, you're at the back of the field anyway, and you just have to be better than Dalton Kellett. Sorry, yeah. Dalton Kellett.
It's like, Dalton, you seem like a really nice guy on Twitter, but, like, the bar's subterranean here.
I mean, the thing I did love about him was when they were doing the iRacing, every time they've done an iRacing thing, Dalton doesn't half-arse it.
No.
Because for this year, he built his own rig out of wood and, like, soldered it himself, and then he had a VR headset.
Wonderful. That is a commitment to the bit right there. Way to go, Dalton.
It's like, it's like, I have an engineering degree and I'm going to use it.
Sure, why not?
Now, Dalton, right. If you want to give up this driving thing, I hear AJ Foyt Enterprises could use some engineers. Dale Coin Racing.
Dale Coin Racing, everybody. And as I call it now, the People's Champions of IndyCar after one, at least from one half of the garage anyway. In the 18, we had Ed Jones. He was 19th overall, was at a best finish of 6th. And in the 51 car, you know him, you love him.
Rick Ware.
Romain Grosjean. don't let the championship position of 15th fool you. Let's not forget he didn't race in the ovals and, of course, the 500, but he did have a pair of second places over the course of the season, including that wonderful one at Indianapolis where he was challenging for the win on that occasion and was awesome. So we have to talk about the revelation that was Rogro this year and what to make of his first overall season in IndyCar, folks.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, you're like 10 season veteran, well, 10 plus season veteran in Formula One, like, definitely shows. It definitely showed.
Yeah, the experience absolutely came through, and like we, as Zoe alluded to earlier, on the other end of the Chilton scale of commitment, my man was all in. You know, brought the whole family over. You know, had to talk the wife into like, can we do the 500 next year, please? You know,
like he knew if he was going to do this, he was going to have to make the commitment. And literally lived in a motorhome for half the year.
And my man bought himself an RV. Did it the proper way.
He bought Raul. And then, because he'd done all the testings, he'd done everything he could. Every track he went to, he got a firefighter t-shirt.
love that. Just leaning into the Phoenix nickname completely at this point.
That's and it great. Was, I mean, the thing that really showed that he'd really been accepted, Laguna Seca, damn that race.
Oh, if you ever wanted the complete Romain Grosjean experience, it was the last 20 laps of that race at Laguna Seca. Alternate strategy from Dale Coyne, because we all know they love a good alternate strategy at Dale Coyne Racing.
Right.
20 laps. Alternate stint tyres, 2 seconds a lap on the field, blistering pace, clumsy incident with Jimmy Johnson at the top of the corkscrew that probably dented him at least a chance at second place. But hey, no one cared because it was Grosjean, it was fun, he was on the podium and he got a standing ovation and a curtain call on the Laguna Seca's podium after finishing third. They love him here. It is actually incredible to see just how many people have gotten on the wagon of Grosjean this quickly. Let's be real here. IndyCar and F1 don't really get along. There's a lot of pretentiousness between both series, rightly or wrongly. So for Grosjean...
We hate you! Well, we hate you more! Well, why don't we just... And then it eventually just evolves into, like, hate makeouts.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, the fanfic writers get on it.
Yeah, we're going the Neo 3 for that one, folks. It was a big old dick measuring contest, often between two series. So for Grosjean to come over from Formula One, and a lot of people, rightly or wrongly, most likely wrongly, were quite cynical about Grosjean's F1 career in general, the fact he went winless, etc., etc. You know, going over to IndyCar, a lot of people look down on IndyCar as a series, again, rightly or wrongly. But Grosjean took it seriously, made the commitment, And I think people noticed that commitment and respected him for said commitment. And by the end of the season, they love him like he's one of our own, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
That's great. Yeah. You know,
yes. Lord knows it took freaking Alexander Rossi at least a year for him to be fully accepted as one of IndyCar's own. You know what I mean? Romain Grosjean, they just loved this dude straight away. And it wasn't even like it was a perfect season, because he had some wretched weekends along the way. Detroit comes to mind right off the bat. Yeah. But there's still room for improvement. Overall, it was good.
I mean, you could tell he's definitely loving the vibe within the paddock, because there was the 4th of July weekend, and it was him, Willpower, and Rinus VK are having this wee barbecue thing between two of the motorhomes. And Romain had his first jello shot.
Oh, wow.
And was then giving us more.
Classic.
And you then had Will comment on the fact that, like, yeah, they didn't let Romain do it himself because they were using an open flame. But he had it, and Romain wasn't very sure about it. But it was just the fact that, like, he was getting to hang around with all these other people, like other drivers. It wasn't the usual sort of F1 paddock. I think the fact as well that you've got a lot of the drivers, their kids are at every other race. I mean, you had it when when he was pretty close to deciding he was wanting to do it. He turned round to Bordy and went, "Do you know any French schools?" And Bordet went, "Yes." Or "We."
Yeah, it's a revelation, and in a good way. Like, F1's loss has most definitely been IndyCar's game. I put in the next note on my list, will the real Ed Jones please stand up? Because, like, Jones entered IndyCar as an exceptional-looking rookie with Dale Coyne. We all said probably too much too soon with Chip in the number 10 car. Didn't work out. He's gone back to Dale Coyne again in the 18 car. And he's just, again, been kind of there and clumsy. And it's just
comments
not
are restricted on his
Jones.
Instagram.
Yeah. You know, it just seems like a big ball of frustration for Ed Jones, because we know the man is better than this. At least, I think he is.
I got some advanced stats from Drew Bennison, the single seater stats. His passing efficiency is fine. His running, he runs well enough in the top five. He holds his position on starts. He actually underperformed his expected points this year, which means he was probably a little unlucky. There were times where Ed Jones was due a good result and it just never materialized. Man, it is frustrating to think that Ed Jones, a 2016 Indy Lights champion. We could go into how that all took place and all, but he was the championship caliber driver in that series for 2 years. He had some terrible breaks when he was in the European lab, because let's not forget, he almost had a career-ending back injury before he even got to America to begin with. But last year he was going to run DTM after running half a year with Carpenter. That DTM deal falls through. He comes back to IndyCar, and probably the last we're going to see of Ed Jones, the full-time driver, is him getting involved in a championship fight by being in an incident at the Hairpin at Long Beach. And that's not how it should have worked out. Not for the guy who we all said should have been Indy 500 champion, Indy 500 rookie of the year in 2017 over the guy they eventually voted in.
Say the line, King!
Which line? What's many a line about Ed Jones?
The Long Beach line.
Oh, this is the closest that Ed Jones will ever get to a championship fight.
Lovely stuff. It's been a turbulent time for Ed Jones, and yeah, just not a good time for him at the moment. You know, again, I'm not sure he's going to be running full time again. There's a lot of rumblings around the future of that 18 car. You know, a possible, like RJ Mirren, a possible split maybe that Vasser and Sullivan might break off on their own.
Vasser and Sullivan want to make their own team
independent
of Dale Coyne Racing. So now it's looking like Dale Coyne Racing might have to find a new partner. The hot rumor is that Takuma Sato is pretty much a done deal in what was Grosjean's car. for what is the 18 car now. They're going to be looking at a new partner, and it might be David Malukas and his family's HMD racing team. Malukas, of course, being last year's Indy Lights runner-up. Let's not forget, he pushed Kyle Kirkwood all the way to the last race meeting of the season. He's not no scrub. No. I wouldn't rate him as high as Kirkwood, but I'd probably rate him a little bit higher than Devin DeFrancesco. That wouldn't be a bad option. You know, Oliver Askew's still on the table because of developments of Ray Letterman. You know, they've got plenty of options there, but I do think they're going to need some scratch to get a two-car team going on a full-time basis. I will say they have much better options to select from than they once did in years past. Because I can remember times distinctly when Dale Coyne was forced to field two car efforts of Rodolfo Gonzalez and Francesco Tricone. This decade!
Dark days.
Oh.
It's bad. Oh, it's better now. It's so much better now. Also, by the way, shout out Rick Ware Racing, the first competent American racing team you have put together in your existence. Fantastic work.
Good work indeed at Dale Coyne. Love the way you see how that one rolls out there. Let's move to Uncle Ed, Oval Master and Space Guardian over at Ed Carpenter Racing. Now, again, we had number 20 car that was split between Ed's Oval runs, including, I think, Ed's fifth at the 500 this year. It's just not going to happen for Ed at the 500, is it, poor guy? And Connor Daly that filled in the rest. Daly was 18th overall, didn't crack the top 10 all year in that Ed Carpenter car, which is a shame. But on the 21 car, we had Rivas Vique, and he's fun. He was 13th in the championship, as well as getting that first win in Indianapolis' road course as well. I mean, we kind of have to zoom in on the 21 first, and I think he might still be a little bit rough around the edges, and I think this is only really because I call it Jonas Volga syndrome, where it's like, you had a great, like, sophomore season here. It's just a shame that some other guys around you had, like, really ridiculous, like, young person seasons around you. But this is, like, a very promising prospect here in Rivas Vique, no?
It probably didn't help the cycling accident either.
Yeah.
No.
Broke his collarbone in between Detroit and Miss Road America. Came back from Mid-Ohio. After he came back, he didn't finish in the top 10 for the rest of the season, which included two wrecks and a fuel pressure failure that knocked him out of the Long Beach Grand Prix. He was as high as 4th in the standings after the first race at Detroit. He dropped to 12th at the end of the season.
That's the only thing that's given me this full heaping endorsement of Rinus VK, because his second half of the season was a lot more like what we'd expect from a rookie. But the first half was just spectacular.
That pass at Indy in May. And he was competitive in the 500. Made another fast 9. Ran up front for most of the race.
Yeah, one of the few guys in the Chevy who can make it work around Indianapolis. And that in itself is a big old ace in the hole for him and for Ed, because we all know what they're really here for. They want that 500 so bad. You know, I think Rinus is an incredible talent. It's just, again, we have 3 or 4 of those now, so it just doesn't feel as special. It's not fair.
With Rinus, I wonder how much, like, he would benefit more if he had a full-time teammate, with Ed being in his box, especially for, like, the ovals, because that seems to be where he's very, like, as good as he is at Indy, he seems a bit...
I'm laughing at because I remember that Connor Daly's sponsor was officially Tired of Pricks?
Yes. Yes.
I remember.
Dark days, as Kid would say earlier, dark days. Oh, dear. I mean, Rinus is great. Like, that's the best prospect that team has had through its door since Newgarden, in my opinion, quite comfortably. Sorry, Spencer. But the 21 is interesting to me. Now, Ed, we all know, is still very self-indulgent. He's going to run his oval rounds because that's what Ed Carpenter does.
Yeah.
You know, they'll run the third car during the 500, no doubt. Is this the end of Connor Daly as a full-timer? Because it's like we've rooted for Daly for a long time for him to get something full time, and it just when he has gotten these full time opportunities, he's just not quite been there. And he's 29 now. He's not a young man anymore in the context of IndyCar, especially as the sport gets younger. Right. Daly kind of sits like a sore thumb now. You're like, is this the end of the road for him?
I'm thinking it may be, and I don't even think that a lot of these results, his bad results, were his fault. Because think back to the Indianapolis 500. Who led more laps than Connor Daly? Nobody. Connor Daly led 40 laps, most of any other driver.
So good.
And then he got clipped on the nose by somebody else's wheel. That is the bad luck Connor meme in a nutshell. And I think I look at him and he's starting to branch out and do NASCAR, and I think he may be ready to move on at this point. It's a shame. Regarding the future of the 20 car, because I know that Ryan Hunter-Reay, who's now a free agent, is going to test, you know. I feel like Ed would be best in that third car to run, like, the Indy 500 and some of the ovals if he wants. Because Ryan Hunter-Reay still got value as a full-time driver. And he'd be the best fit to take over that 20 car at a full-time basis of all the available options.
Yeah, like, of all the talent that I've seen left in the open, Hunter-Reay has definitely the biggest, the best.
You cannot tell me that Ryan Hunter-Reay is just content to be a road course specialist.
No. Sure. Again, he wants another 500. Why wouldn't you be thinking that, you know? So, yeah, I think that's absolutely a prospect indeed. I hope it's not the end for Connor. But at the same time, I've always rooted for Connor. I always, he's one of the genuine, you know, personalities of IndyCar, but it just feels like the end of the road for him as a full-timer in the series. Speaking of end of the road, and also some a very interesting lineup for next year, Mayer-Shank Racing, where it was all change, and well, they hit the jackpot. We'll get to that in a second. Number 60, Jack Harvey, 13th overall. Like it feels weird to say this. Jack Harvey didn't get on the podium this year.
Not a lack of
weird indeed. In flip the numbers around, the 06 car, and that was Helio Castroneves, part-time, and it says in my notes here, Indy 500 winner? Yes, Helio won the Indy 500 for Mayer-Shank Racing. Everybody in that team lost their damn minds, and rightly so. We'll talk about Helio a little bit in a minute, but Jack Harvey, when I was drawing my notes up for this show, I was shocked that to remember that Harvey hadn't even touched the podium all year and was actually 13th overall, because it feels like he was better than that this year. Am I crazy for thinking this?
No.
No, you're not.
He did. There you go.
I want to make the point that, like, by the time this episode comes out, race fans will have their top 10 IndyCar drivers. I wrote that. I put Jack Harvey at number 10 over Reynolds VK or Simon Pagenaud because, look, you expect Simon Pagenaud to finish top 10 in Penske equipment. You don't really expect that out of Jack Harvey. And Jack Harvey didn't end up off the podium for lack of effort, because there were multiple occasions. The second race of Texas immediately comes to mind where he at least has a podium in the bag, and then his wheel bearing breaks.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I remember that now. Yeah, and I think Indy Road Course, he was running top three, top four as well, and then he had a mechanical issue there as well. I mean,
and I think there was one where he had a pit stop. I think there was once or twice where it was the pit stops as well, and you're like, can we please give this man a break?
Yeah, I still saw the sad man video of him basically still going up after the race and thanking every member of the pit crew for all their hard work, because that's the sort of person that Jack Harvey is. He's one of the nicest dudes in the paddock, is what everyone has said. I don't think the results tell the full story with Jack. I think he's I think he's one of the most improved drivers in the series over the last three years.
And he finished the year hot. Four top 10 finishes in the last five races. Just what you need to impress your new bosses as you're hitting the free agent market and going to another organization.
We got the word. It had been an open secret for a little while now, but it was finally confirmed earlier this week. He will be in the 45 car at Rahal Letterman Lanigan Racing full time next year. That's a coup for RRL. I think that's a very nice three car team. We'll get to the number 30 driver in a minute, but just trust me on this one. It's a good team. Harvey, I think, is a great, great talent, and that, I think that's going to be a very interesting ride to see, because I think he's got two very interesting benchmarks alongside him at RLL next year. What do we make of their 2022 lineup? Because we talked about it a little bit at the end of the season, where it was confirmed that Simon Pagenaud is going to replace Harvey in the number 60 car, and Helio is back full time next year in his age 47 season. Which is quite... What do we make of that full-time? It's certainly experienced.
They're winning the best hairdos on the paddock.
Oh, yeah.
Hands down.
That lettuce is tight.
Magnificent hair, indeed. But, I mean... Kate, what do we make of that as a full-time team for next year? Because that is interesting.
As a full-time team, I'd say, obviously, ultimate goal... try to win Helio a fifth Indianapolis 500 championship. Besides the 500, you know, bigger picture, try to build up a team for post Castro Neves Pagenaud, obviously.
It's, I mean, as soon as this was announced, our resident Pagenaud fan, Cam, on our Discord server was like, it's an Indy 500 death lineup, and that's what it feels like. I mean, if you were drawing up a list of active runners in the field to win the Fiat 500 in a two-car team, I think those two guys would probably be in your top five or six picks.
Yeah.
You know, it's if you wanted to, if you're going into this purely with the intention of defend the 500.
Oh, it's more than just defend the 500. If like this is untrodden ground. No driver's ever won the Indianapolis 500 five times. If Shank is able to do that with Castro Neves, they're going to be around forever. Like they're going to be able to get sponsorship regardless of Helio even being at the team. Yeah.
Michael Shank is a big Bush Light guy, right? Like that's what he ordered after he won the 500. I have a feeling that like Bush Light would give them like a long term like 50-year sponsorship deal at this point. Move over, Auto Nation, and SiriusXM. We want in on this gravy train. Meyer Shank Racing is interesting because I feel like Jack Harvey and MSR are both in better places at the end of their journey than they were before that, because Jack Harvey's a rookie, Meyer Shank Racing is a brand new team. Now, Harvey is leaving to a team that he feels like he could be competitive, but also he leaves Meyer Shank in a position where they can be competitive for race wins on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Simon Pagenaud has got to be feeling great because he knows that there is life after Penske. He knows that after seven seasons at Penske, of which he spent 16 of them with his job under threat, he still can find a competitive seat. And it'll give him an opportunity to go back to sports car racing, which is the thing he loves to do on the side. I don't know if Helio Castroneves is going to finally... win a national title. Probably not. I've seen his results in the other 500 races. They weren't great. But, you know, it's another year of Helio Castroneves around for a full season. And who doesn't love that?
Probably not going to get him an SRX next year, though.
The little thing.
They'll just have to make do.
Listen, we'll probably get James Hinchcliffe on commentary. It'll be fine. sad face. Arrow McLaren SP. Now, if there was ever a tale of two seasons, Arrow McLaren SP probably fits that bill more than any other. In the red corner, the number five car, Pato O'Ward, third in the championship, led the championship on multiple occasions throughout the year, two wins as well, including that barnstormer in Texas. Incredible season. On the other end of the coin, the blue corner, the number seven car of Felix Rosenqvist. 21st overall? What the hell? This was a bizarre Arrow McLaren SP season overall. I know for Felix, it was a mitigating factor. He took an injury in Detroit, of course, and missed significant time through that. But even when he was healthy, this was not a great first year at him for McLaren and Felix. But we'll get to him in a minute. But Pato O'Ward... oh man, this, if there was any doubts at the end of last season, this man is the real deal. What a word, what a talent.
Boss office. tremendous. Really great dude. Fantastic driver. He would fit into Formula One if he ever got the opportunity. But I'm so glad he's here in IndyCar right now, just doing stuff like, hey, you're not supposed to pass at Texas when 2/3 of the track surface is fucking unusable. And then he did it in clutch time. You're not supposed to pass at Detroit. Paddle car through the field in the first race and just made it look easy as he took a win. The only thing he is missing, from his game is his ability to mitigate, like, the different tire compounds, because that was the only thing he struggled with going from primary to alternates or from scrub to new sets, depending on the situation. That was really the only thing he was missing. If he gets that around, whoo, multiple championships, good health one. Oh my God. This is such a good season. This guy's so good. He's still 21 years old, by the way. Still 21, 22? 22. He's going
to be around for a while. He's 22 years old. That's just terrifying to even acknowledge. Oh, sorry.
I mean, he... Based on how he's... He managed to get Mexico to watch the season finale.
Yeah.
He put in the bill himself.
Yeah.
He put in the bill. There's Pato TV.
But yeah, Pato TV, and yeah, Mexico gets behind their athletes. If you're big in Mexico, you're big in Mexico, which is a huge deal. I mean, King, I know you alluded to this when we talked about it a bit at the end of the season. I suspect the lack of a set of a rear gunner in the 7 car was probably, it might have been the difference maker that might have gotten Pato over the line for the championship.
Yeah, that, you know, you can have a second driver not only to get data and help the first driver performance-wise, but tactically out on track, it would be nice to have someone up near the front with you to help take points off title rivals.
And Felix let the side down in that regard. He didn't finish in the top 5 all season. And we know Felix is better than this. We saw it in the 10 car. We thought, hang on. Like, they might have something in the 10 car last year with Felix. He was challenging Dixon at times. He had, you know, wins in his own right. He thought, okay, they might have something here. Then it was like, oh, he's going to McLaren. Okay. And, yeah, from day one, it's not been great for Felix. It looks like he's going to get a second chance next year.
It should be noted that, like, I don't know where it's how McLaren set up their IndyCars, but Pato seems overall, he can drive them pretty well. Okay, that's about answer. He can drive them really fucking well.
Yeah.
But Askew struggled last year, even before his accident, or he was sort of getting the hang of it, and then he had his accident, and then never really. And Felix, again, I don't know, maybe it's just with how they set up the cars, you really need to have the more... Pato has got that very overly aggressive, very, I'm going to make 20 million moves to the steering wheel and you're not going to know how I'm still on the track. And I don't know whether for the more smoother drivers, it's not as easy to handle. And that's part of where the...
I would have a different stance where at that point you're kind of asking whether it's not the second driver of the team, whether like Pato's just that fast and that good and McLaren are the team that are actually struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe it's a Marc Marquez situation where he's papering over the cracks or mitigating some of their weaknesses as a team because
Pato very
you look
much
around
seems...
besides Pato, people were struggling.
Mm-hmm. Pato very much seems to be one of those drivers where it's there's an issue with the car. I can still drive it.
Yeah, he's definitely someone who could drive around a lot of issues, and I don't think Felix was able to do that this season. This was shocking. Leave the injury aside. He didn't make the fast sits until Nashville. He didn't finish in the top 10 till that Nashville weekend. We know how silly that race was.
Because the thing is that makes me think that it is largely on the team is it was like this before the rebrand where Schmidt Peterson really struggled across both cars, and then you just put Patricio Ward in, and suddenly he's doing really well.
Yeah. True. Pinch on the ovals when they had Lena Gade on the team, Robert Wickens all of a sudden being really good in the first year he was there. There's been consistency issues with Schmidt Peterson for a while, certainly, and this might be a carryover from that. Good season, Taylor, and the boys at boys and girls at Arrow McLaren SP, but there's clearly more on the table here. If they really do want to be talking about championship contention, you know, like really, really challenging for the title, then I think some more work may need to be done.
Yeah, but hey, they got to get some more engineers. They got to get some more people. And, you know, they're thinking of starting a third team. They're testing Nico Hülkenberg. Nico Hülkenberg has changed his tune on IndyCar. He's interested now. He's going to be testing one at Barber. Maybe he's going to be the third driver that helps turn all this around. Or maybe this is just like a third car that's not going to perform as well as Patricio Ward is. Who knows?
And all we know for sure that if Nico joins, then Felix has to get a co-carry from Pato in order to be able to look Nico in the eye.
Oh boy, I'm glad. Boy, Kevin Magnussen's probably glad. He's thinking, glad I'm out of this one.
No kidding. Look, if you wanted to bring over an F1 guy that can give you a good baseline, there are a few guys I would rather take than Nico Hülkenberg.
Sergei Sorokin.
Saw it last year. Stop it.
Rio Harriato.
No, really, stop it. Rahal Letterman Lanigan Racing, everybody. They're next up. And this was a season that looks a bit like most RLL seasons. Graham Rahal in the 15 car was 7th in the championship, had the one podium this year. We had Takuma Sato dropped off a little bit this year, was 11th overall. He didn't get on the podium at all this year, again, which is a bit of a minor surprise. Sato's always good for a couple of those a year, you'd feel. But not this time round. I mean, again, when I was doing the notes for this team, there was one great big red cross next to the Indy 500, I think, is where the shortcomings for their season was most felt. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
Graham Rahal had a car that stood a chance at finishing in the top five, and the wheel came off. It literally came out, and it was the only blemish on what was otherwise another consistent... not the most spectacular, but he's consistently able to get points, is Graham Rahal. And that's pretty much been his story ever since the Universal Air Kit era started.
Yeah, he had the car, he had the strategy. It seemed like it was going to be his year to get his face on the Borg Warner, but no.
We forgot a tire.
The tire of poor judgment came off the 15 car, and it ruined Connor Daly, who was running in the lead for 40 laps as well, because Connor Daly can't get a damn bit of good luck either. And it was a shame, because a better 500 and Rahal's probably in the top five of the championship, and we're talking about, though, Rahal's just still so consistent. And as King alluded to, I think that element is going to be more important as the years go by, because this is now such a competitive championship. Rahal rarely has a bad day. Doesn't have a bad day anymore. He just, the problem might be he maybe doesn't have the ceiling that some of the other guys in this series has now, but the floor is still incredibly high with Graham, and that might be enough in this new era. Well, new-ish era, I guess you could say. It's an interesting team going forward, folks, as well. I mean, how do we feel Jack Harvey's going to fare alongside Graham? Because those two have had some beef in the past as well.
It is going to be terrifying to see Jack Harvey at a team with real resources. The huge vault of experience that Rahal Letterman Lanigan has. This team's gonna be the sleeper next year. People were gonna wonder why a bunch of their guys are out pretty high up in the standings next year.
Uh-huh.
Should we talk about who's in the 30? because it was announced about 6 hours ago at time of recording. Thank you, RLL, for dropping this on the day. I'm very grateful for it. Taking the number 30 next year will be Alpine prospect and Formula 2 driver Christian Lundgaard. I'm like, and I saw that and I was like, ooh, that's spicy. I was like, ooh, I like this. I mean, we all saw him at Indy's road course earlier in the year when he stood in. And I think that qualifying session where he put it in the far six at the first attempt probably did more for his stock than the previous season and a half he'd done at ART in Formula 2. They were like, oh my God, this kid's quick. He's lightning quick. This was, I mean, it's hard not to get excited about this. I mean, RJ, what do you make of it?
There were a lot of good auditions in that 45 car, which, as we know, is now going to Jack Harvey. We had a weekend we were just like, we can't get rid of Santino Ferrucci. As much as we want to, he just won't finish outside the top 10 with a broken foot, crashing and qualifying. He did good. Then Lundgaard comes in, has a fantastic opening weekend with one test under his belt. And then all the pressure falls on Oliver Askew, and that car is still quick, but he just couldn't get the results in. This is going to be a really fascinating team because I almost feel like Graham needs somebody to push him along to better results. As much as he thrived when he was just the lone dude at Ray Hall about 6-7 years ago, I think he was always wondering, you know, why don't I have another car to help push me along the way? Well, now you've got two people that still have a lot of their careers in front of them to help you with that. Everything's just as you want it, buddy. Go out there and kick some ass, my dude.
It is hard to believe that you're almost at 15 years of Graham Rahal in the top tier of North American single seat racing now, and
he was at one point the youngest ever winner.
He's been around that long.
He's still only 32.
Yeah. I was gonna say he's done nearly 15 years here now, and half a decade ago, he was the best man in the championship in a Honda. And he was on his own going up against the biggest and best the series had. Juan Pablo Montoya and Scott Dixon. We know what Rahal is capable of. And now he's gone from basically running on his own to a three-car team. It's crazy how fast RLL has progressed when he can now comfortably run three cars. And now it's an all-star team, essentially. You've got an incredibly high ceiling Formula 2 guy. I am on the higher end of rating Lundgaard. I think he's a great talent. Maybe not an A-plus prospect, but I think a very high ceiling on Lundgaard's talents. And then you've got Harvey, who was always punched above his weight in the last 2-3 years at Meyer Shank, and Rahal, who we all know can win races. Again, amazing he's gone winless for 4 years now, which is just strange to even consider. That's a hell of a team. It's a very strong team. It is a team that I think is only maybe half a step behind the big three, which we'll get to right after this. But there's a lot to like here.
My favorite fact for this new lineup is the average height is 6'0.33".
Oh boy,
Jack Harvey, our 5'10" short.
5'10", which, as they would say on Oversimplified about Napoleon, it was average height for the time. he's average height and he's 5'10". Not a fair fight.
Gabby Chavez out here looking with his eyes over on the side. Let's get into the big three. Let's start with Penske.
Yes, we're surprised that Penske is getting mentioned this early on as well. Don't ask us how. But, I mean, the fleet was the fleet, but just overall, a strange season for Penske. Joseph Newgon was championship runner-up in the end. Second straight year of him finishing in runner-up. Two wins on the year. We had Scott McLaughlin in the free car. He was 14th overall. Rookie of the year overall. The only man to finish every single race in IndyCar this past season. A pretty good rookie year from him. We had Power 9th overall, did get a win at Indianapolis' road course. He's almost tradition for Power at this point over the course of the year. Got a win at Indy somewhere. And Pagano, who was one place above him in eighth, had a couple of podiums, but went winless on the year in the 22 car. Folks, on a sliding scale of disappointing to complete unmitigated disaster, how are we evaluating Penske's season here?
Mild disappointment. It would have been disaster if Willpower missed the Indianapolis 500, and thank goodness he got in. Of course, it didn't end up going much better after that.
I mean, I listened to the, because I love the fact that you can listen to it and on the radios for the app. If you don't already have it, download it. But Will spent half the time having mental breakdowns.
He snapped Detroit.
Oh, he snapped to Detroit, but even before that, the first Indy Grand Prix, when he didn't make it, he was mad. And it was that kind of a, we haven't seen this Will since he was fighting with Dario for a championship. And it was this whole thing where it's, you know he's got the skills, but it's just, if something could go wrong, it was. It's like, Marco Andretti has left, therefore Will has inherited his incredible sense of luck. That's the only way I can explain it.
Yeah, this was... It's a strange time at Penske overall. I mean, on one end, you've got Joseph Newgarden, who you could make a case is the best all-round driver in the series. Like, he is a superb driver, and we know he has been now for, again, better part of half a decade.
My man got shit hot in the summer, and he should have had 3 wins in a row. He cashed in one of them, ironically, in the one race I was working at, on location at the time. And he had to hold on by the skin of his teeth to get that one, too.
If that gearbox doesn't break at Road America,
yeah,
you'd probably look at it a 3-time champion. It's swings and roundabouts, because that was a race that was won by Alex Palou, because of course it was. And Newgarden is still so goddamn good. And then around him, you've got Power, who I don't know if we're entering the twilight of Power's career. It's a strange one. He certainly was probably below his expected points mark and was unlucky, certainly, over the course of the year. But he is also now in his upper 30s. And I'm not entirely sure if he's got the temperament to maybe over an entire season win a title. We saw cracks. Mm-hmm. He's still quick, but we saw cracks. I mean, look at Mid-Ohio. That was clumsy from Will. That was an unexpected level of clumsy.
And Nashville.
Him. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was... Nashville,
if you were a teammate, you were getting taken out.
And they're now downsizing to 3 cars, because Pagano will not be replaced. I also wanted to talk about this as well. Like, is this downsizing going to put more pressure on McLaughlin?
It's going to help put more resources on McLaughlin, which is going to be good for his development, because we've said this multiple times on the show, he has a very scant single-seater experience going into this IndyCar season. It's like a race in Formula Ford before he went to supercars, and then a cup of coffee in IndyCar before that. That's it. That he finished every race and did this well, it's an incredible accomplishment for him. Now we do have to grade that on a curve, and being a Penske driver, McLaughlin's not going to get that benefit of the doubt going forward.
No. We associate Penske with excellence.
We don't associate them with project drivers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, forgive me, that was my brother in the background there. United have come back to the lead 3-2. It's a crazy time for them. But it's a strange... I mean, we associate Penske with excellence. In their heyday, they were winning 10 races a year. You know, it's eventually going to get to the point where they're going to be asking McLaughlin to be getting on the podium on a regular basis. And that is going to be the question mark. McLaughlin probably needs another couple of steps to get to that point.
I'll tell you one thing I noticed about McLaughlin. He is ready as far as his oval strengths. And I know Team Penske has a lot more resources they could dump into an oval program than a lot of other teams. but my dude looks ready. He had a shot to win at Texas, and he definitely should have finished way higher up than he did at the Indianapolis 500, if not for trouble in the pit lane, which affected not only him, but Will Power as well.
It's annoying as well, because, like, what's the best of a mean word in this? He's going to take another couple of steps forward. He's going to want podiums and race wins, and I'm not sure he's going to be on that level, and it could end up being a similar situation to where Pagano was, where he's always going to be under pressure to perform, because now you've got Will Power, one of the best ever in the series, and Joseph
Newgarden. He's on a long-term deal.
Yeah, and Joseph, who's on, you know, one of the best drivers in the world, point blank. It's a big talent ceiling there he's got to climb up to fit that bill. And that's what worries me about McLaughlin's situation. I want to see him do well, because I think he's an exceptional talent.
Yeah, we named an award after him before he even got here.
Exactly. It's going to be interesting. I mean, as well, you mentioned the ovals as well, RJ. The Indy 500 is now a serious weakness for Penske. Like, they just don't get a car up there now. Not since Pagano won it, you know, 3 years ago now. Like, it just feels like this is an anchor for him now. It's the most important round of the championship as well, because, again, Joseph wasn't really competitive at the 500 this year.
We'd be talking a much different story if this race was a lap longer. Simon Pagenaud feels like probably could have won it, because he drove from the back to finish third. And the year before that, Joseph Newgarden salvaged a top five finish out of it. They've got to figure out something. I don't know if everything's just out of whack because of the aero screen and how that's changed a lot of. It's changed a lot of how everybody does everything, but it seems like it really hit them at the 500 that long. I would be shocked if they are this bad. Not like this, like, terrible, but like this underwhelming at the 500, especially during time trials, this time again next year. I would be amazed.
I mean, there are things like, Will is. He should have two wins this season. Because remember, at Detroit, when they had the red flag, car then died. And he basically had to sit and watch Marcus take his win. And then it was Rossi, of all people, who had to go over to Will and go, calm down, it's okay.
I do not envy anyone that has to try and calm down Will Power. not sound like an easy task. Andretti. Another proper mixed bag. We've got 26, Colton Herta, top five in the championship. Only Pillow matched him for race wins. Had three on the year, including that sensational, I think, the best individual performance of the year at Long Beach as well. That was ridiculous. Alex Rossi was 10th overall. Didn't win a race this year. Hunter Ray was 17th overall. Didn't get on the podium this year. He struggled in what we now know is his last season at Andretti after 12 years there. And James Hinchcliffe was pretty much racing hurt the entire year and was down in 20th, but somehow shithoused the podium in Nashville. Just because. And it's hard not to talk about Andretti right now without talking about Colton Herta and his future, because the stories right now are white hot regarding his future. And whether Andretti is going to F1, and if they are going to F1, does Herta headline a Andretti Alfa Romeo team, so to speak, alongside Valtteri Bottas? And how do we feel on this one, folks? Because we talked about this a little bit before, but it's now looking like there's a serious chance this may actually happen.
Their Twitter account teased us earlier on today.
Like, oh, we got a team announcement. It's a crypto sponsor.
In Formula E, not a driver.
And it's a green blockchain, whatever that means.
Colton Herta is good enough on merit to race in Formula One. Let's talk about some early career anecdotes, like the fact that the only people that finished ahead of him when he was in British Formula 4 were dudes like Lando Norris and Dan Ticktum. One of them's already gotten there. One of them, well, the talent wasn't the issue there. He won three races this year. Unexpected points, according to Drew Bennison, he could have easily been IndyCar champion, if not for four backbreaking DNFs, and only one of them was really his fault.
Mm-hmm.
Everything indicates that he's good enough. At this stage in his career, you feel like, if it doesn't work out, because what is now Alfa Romeo Formula One team has got to do a lot of rebuilding before Colton Herta could be competitive for points. At this stage in his life, Colton Herta is still in his early 20s. He's still only 21 years old. He could, if this doesn't work out, he could come back to IndyCar and pick up right back where he left off, good health willing, and get back right back to where he was.
King, how do you feel about it? I know you talked about it on Twitter earlier today.
Yeah, just pretty much the tweet was pretty much what RJ said at the end there, where, like, Colton Herta is 21. He could go have a 5-year career in IndyCar, in Formula One, and come back and still be, what, how old is Scott McLaughlin now?
27, 28, I think.
Yeah, so he'd be around the same age McLaughlin is right now as a rookie. Mm-hmm. So, and he would still have, you know, 12, maybe even 18 years left on his career in IndyCar. Like, there's nothing to lose for an experience that is literally once in a lifetime.
Uh-huh. Yeah, look, I'm in the same camp as King, and when he mentioned his tweet earlier, look, I love IndyCar as much as the next guy. I adore this series. I would love nothing more for Colton Herta to be a frontrunner in this series for the next 20 years. He reminds me of Pato in that he's box office. Absolutely blistering breakneck pace. Maybe the fastest of anyone in the entire series on raw ability alone. But when F1 comes calling, mm-hmm. and the opportunity is there to take an F1 seat, you've got to at least answer the call. Mm-hmm.
And let me put it this way. No matter what, Colton Herta will eventually come back to IndyCar.
Mm-hmm.
And it would do tremendous things for the sport if you were to go to Formula One, become an international star, and then bring all that attention back to IndyCar.
It's a great point. Mm-hmm. It's a great point. You know, it would be a win for everybody concerned, because I know F1 is also desperate to try and crack America, and you've got one of the brightest talents in North America, period, driving an F1. You know, that's something I think the series has low-key wanted for a good decade or more. You know, they want an American star. They're trying to crack the American market. They're not going to Miami by coincidence.
They're not trying to go to Los Angeles by coincidence.
No. Don't you mean Las Vegas, RJ?
Las Vegas, yeah, that's right.
Big difference there.
I know we're trying to erase that certain casino chain from our minds, but we gotta acknowledge it.
Look, no, the plan is, we knock down some buildings, and we can do Long Beach again.
Oh. This is what we're not about to do. No, no. Look,
what we're about to do is knock down some buildings and do Caesar's Palace again.
King.
We're going to put up buildings in the parking lot of Allegiant Stadium, so that way we can turn Allegiant Stadium into Caesar's Palace 2.0. This is not all a Formula One season review. Conundrum, because, damn, it would suck to see Colton Herta have to finish down in the teens every weekend for the rest of his Formula One days. But it's a good opportunity. I get it. It's a conflict. I would love to see Colton Herta in F1. If it's competitive, he's even better. But he's got nothing to lose, especially because he come back in IndyCar. But you'd also love to see him rack up titles while he's still in his early 20s.
It's horrible, because if you could sit there and fight. I mean, it may be now's the best, if he was going to do the jump, now's the best time with the big rules changes, but
It's a tough one for me. It's a tough one for me because, like I said, I like IndyCar making its own stars more than anything else. But F1 is F1. Mm-hmm. It's 50 times the series IndyCar is, relatively speaking. And it would be a huge win for F1 if you get Colton Herta in there in some capacity with the Andretti name, a name that people know. And if they could somehow manage to pull this together in the most optimal scenario, it's incredibly exciting.
I mean, you'd like to think that based off his own experience, Michael is the whole reason he's doing what he's doing is to try and give Colton the best chance so that he doesn't have the same situation that he had. Granted, there were other factors with him, such as not wanting to move a young family, and certainly if he was only going to be doing one season.
Yeah, I wouldn't think he's coming from it from that particular angle.
No, but
I think it's that right now, in terms of marketing and investment, international sport has never been higher than it is now. Even high speed yacht racing's getting a big investment now.
That's
in terms of Ben Ainsley.
Not because of but like in terms of the opportunity to go from millionaire to billionaire, this is the perfect opportunity for Michael Andretti.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's not going to get a better chance than this one. Well, by the way F1 is at the moment. Yeah. And you know, it's hard not to dodge that.
And
he's now got
the perfect way to get money to help fund it.
Yeah.
With that new sponsor.
With that new sponsor. Get it through totally legitimate means.
And, the funny money.
And yes, with F1 trying to crack America right now, and yes, there is another American team. There isn't a team with the racing heritage that Andretti has. If they were to be in F1, every American company would want to sponsor either Mercedes or Ferrari first, and then Andretti second. Being pretty much ahead of half the grid in terms of, you know, desirability is really huge.
No, that's huge. No, that's a very good point.
And you just stick Mario just to hang around the paddock.
Yeah! Who doesn't love Mario's presence?
Yeah, right. we're gonna have the non-executive chairman card game. Just Mario, Alan Roth.
Brilliant. Love that role. Just get Mario in a cool hat and everything's sorted. Right. We've got to talk a little bit about the rest of the team real quick. Would it be fair to say that Colton Herta masked a lot of issues amongst Andretti this year?
Colton Herta, if he comes to Formula 1, he's going to have to get, like, spinal fusion surgery for carrying that entire organization on his back for 2 damn years. Yeah. Let's talk about it. Alessandro Rossi looked better this year than he did last season, but it's clearly not what we've come to expect from him back from 2017 to 2019, his prime. We know Ryan Hunter raised in decline. We know James Hinchcliffe drove the whole year hurt physically and hurt spiritually at the way that his last job ended. We've talked about it a number of times. Mm-hmm. It's kind of bad when your satellite team, Meyer Shank Racing, is out here clapping your cheeks every week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With the same technical resources.
Yeah, like, if you put Harvey amongst the Andretti's, he was splitting them in two. And he wasn't a million miles off Alex Rossi. Like, that is a problem. That shouldn't be happening. It's a bit like a few years for Ducati in MotoGP when the Pramac are out doing the factory team on occasions. It's not the best look in the world. Don't let Tarnozzi jumping up and down fool you. It's not good.
At Long Beach, based on some of the comments that Rossi came out with after the incident in practice, it doesn't look like it's going all that well in the back room between the drivers.
No. We've talked about this a little bit in the last couple of years. There seems to be genuine tension in that camp where it feels like it doesn't feel harmonious. Mm-hmm. I think Alex Rossi's gotten more and more grumpy as the years have gone on at Andretti.
Well, yeah, he's got a long-term deal and his results are tanking.
Yeah. And it seems like within the team, all the attention and focus is on Colton Herta. Mm-hmm. Where pretty much Colton Herta is Mario's other grandson.
Mm-hmm.
Bam! Yeah. It feels that way sometimes, doesn't it? Because all the talk has been on. Because we first heard the Colton F1 rumors back in April. No. So this has been. It's been. It's been the year of Colton Herta being the vocal point of Andretti, even more so than last year when he burst on the scene and won races. This actually felt worse from that standpoint, because it's like Colton's been associated with the big things that Alex Rossi wanted in Formula One half a decade ago.
Yeah, pretty
and
much.
And it's now
like,
Colton's the guy now.
When you're Alex Rossi and you're seeing the team literally trip over themselves to try to fulfill all the dreams that you had, but for another dude.
I mean, one of the things is, since they've brought in the aero screen, he doesn't seem to, I don't know whether it's just, maybe it's a driving style thing, but he's one of the drivers that hasn't seemed to been able to adapt to it.
Yeah, considering that in terms of experience with the IndyCar, he already had less experience than a lot of the other guys. And he spent most of his time before this in, you know, European single-seaters. Now he moves over to a heavy American single-seater, made even heavier. And it certainly affected him.
Definitely. This feels like a changing of the guard. We've got Romain Grosjean coming in the 28 car. It's already weird seeing Grosjean in yellow. It's incredibly strange.
I was getting so used to him in purple.
Yeah, purple's a cool color, and now he's in the yellow of VHL. It's just weird. We got Grosjean in the 28. We don't know the 29 yet. I mean, we were teased today thinking it might... Surely it's Kyle Kirkwood.
I don't think the tease was going to be that. I don't think it was going to be, because I know that they're still evaluating Kyle Kirkwood, and Devlin DeFrancesco in the 29. The hot rumor is DeFrancesco's got a lot more money to fund a full-time seat in the 29 car, which is probably something that car is going to need. They still want to do something with Kirkwood. They don't want to let him go. It doesn't look like they're going to stash him in Formula E. But it doesn't look like they can commit to him for a full-time ride unless Colton Herta is suddenly free, unless that 26 car is suddenly freed up by a driver going to another series.
Well, the lineup, the potential lineup of Herta, Grosjean, Kirkwood, and Rossi, honestly, that'd put Rossi at the bottom of the pile.
Which 2 years ago would be preposterous. Sorry, you're right about Marco in the back as well, sorry, but that's a preposterously good lineup. If Alex Rossi is your fourth guy, like, that's an outrageous team lineup. No matter which way you slice it, but there's a lot of hoops to jump through before we know exactly what's going to be going on with Andretti. And that's just an IndyCar, let alone other potential series they could race in. We might know more after COTA this weekend. We might not. We'll have to wait and see. I think there'll be a few more twists in that story just yet. Final team on the list, Chip Ganassi Racing. And, this went well. what does it say about a mainly three-car outfit? We'll get to you in a minute, Jimmy. When all three of your team's cars get in the top six of the championship. Marcus Ericsson, multiple wins, sixth in the championship. Scott Dixon, second in command this year. Weird to say. Fourth overall, only the one win at Texas the first time round. And then the champion, Alex Palou. Three wins on the year. Like, we have the biggest Alex Palou fan in motorsport in this Discord channel, in this Riverside studio. We've got the two biggest Alex Palou fans here, and I don't think even those two thought that this was possible.
I think it says a lot about how strong Ganassi is right now when two of their drivers got more wins than Scott Dixon.
Marcus Ericsson had two wins to Scott Dixon's one. What universe are we living in?
Marcus Ericsson went 3 meters up in the air and clinched more wins than Scott Dixon. Scott Dixon had a terrible season by his standards, which means he still finished in the top five in the points again. He still led most of the race at Texas. He still led more laps than any other driver in the season. But, you know, that's Scott Dixon in decline, which means that's still a really excellent driver by any other standards.
I mean, he's 75 laps off being the person to lead the most laps at Indy.
Yeah.
And he's only got one of them. Only got somehow one there.
And he'd probably trade in all six of those national titles he has for one more 500 win.
Yes, that's right, folks.
Big Ralph DePalma vibes.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
that's right,
yeah,
folks. Scott Dixon once again failed to win back-to-back championships.
Again, like one of the greatest drivers in North American motorsport history, by any measure.
Can't win back-to-back.
Can't defend titles. What a strange criticism to have. It's like in cricket with Joe Root. Oh, he can't convert 50s into 100s. What a problem to have. It's a weird one. I think... Yeah, go on, Zoe.
The other stat in regards to Dixon is this is only the sixth year since Ganassi made the move over to IndyCar back in 2003 that Dixon has finished outside the top three.
And two of those years were when Toyota was shit at the end of their run.
Like, just to emphasize, like, how... Like...
Yeah.
Like, this is why I selected him for the Motorsport Magazine Hall of Fame.
Yeah. I get it. Like, look, Dixon is one of the greatest drivers of the 21st century. By any measure and order of magnitude, he is a monster. He is a freak in the context of IndyCar. Pelot beat him in his house, and that might be the most significant part of this. Chip might not have to rely on Dixon carrying the team anymore. That is huge.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That is a game changer. Because
they have not had that since Dario Franchitti was forced into retirement.
Yeah. They had Ericsson and Pelot have 5 wins this year. Mm-hmm. 5. In one of the most competitive IndyCar seasons we've ever witnessed. Dixon doesn't have to be the first port of call anymore, if Pelot can keep this up.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, Chip Ganassi is going to be a very different team going forward. And I mean that in the nicest possible way. They have a team, not just one exceptional driver and someone who's maybe not quite as good in the number 10. They have 2 elite drivers now. Mm-hmm. That is a terrifying... Look, if Ericsson can keep this up for another... Because he's a bit of an outlier in the grand scheme of things. But if your third best guy is finishing 6th in the championship with multiple wins, you've got an exceptional racing team around you. There's no doubt about that in IndyCar right now.
And I've seen things from Marcus Ericsson since he came to Ganassi that makes me think, this is a little bit sustainable. You know, the way he got those wins, very fluky. But the peripherals around it suggest... Yeah, it could still be pretty good for a little while longer.
Since he's joined Ganassi, he's definitely, like, the consistency that he sort of showed hints of Mitch Peterson, it was still there, but he was getting better results. So the fact that he's now got wins is just improving that. But
there is clear sign of significant improvement, and that's about as much as you can ask for, especially from your number 3 driver.
Uh-huh.
You know, if that's happening for your number 3 guy, again, you're in excellent shape. There's no doubt about that. You've got Dixon, you've got Pelot, you've got Marcus Ericsson, and Jimmy's here too. We all love Jimmy. Helmets for everybody. And
he's a rookie again.
He's a rookie again. He'll be taking part in the 500 races. That'll be a big deal. Just having Jimmy Johnson take part in the 500 is a huge deal. There'll be a lot of people tuning in for that.
That has been the end game of this whole Jimmy Johnson IndyCar experience. Because we know the end game is not like finishing in the 20s every weekend and spinning a couple times at every road and street course race. No, it's Jimmy Johnson getting to run the Indianapolis 500.
Yeah. The stuff of dreams, the stuff of fantasy talk maybe half a decade ago, and now, fingers crossed, it'll be happening in 2022, and that in itself is huge. I mean, is there anything to change about Chip Ganassi going forward? I don't think there is. They're just exceptional.
One of the things, when they done the testing at the start of the year, apparently Dixon knew there and then that they'd finally... Apparently he himself knew they finally got someone who could compete with him.
Wow.
Which says something if you're just doing test and he's like, you are the one.
This is a man who had Dario Franchitti as a teammate. He was like, Dario was good. You know, Felix was okay. This kid. this chicken he's man, Dan he can drive.
Like, he had Dan Weldon as well. Like, he has had, like, and Tony Kanaan as well. Like, he has had
great drivers,
proper teammates. And since Dario, like, after his last championship, that, after that, Scott Dixon went back to being the guy, the only guy who was winning for Ganassi.
Mm.
Yeah, last year, Felix won a race as well, but Dixon won more still. This is, like, the first time in his entire IndyCar, like, or the first time since Dario, that he's had teammates that could actually, like, compete with him. That he's not had to sit there and go, yes, I am competing against Penske. I'm going to have to hope the other Honda cars are good because my teammates are shite.
And now he may not have to have that problem anymore. And that might be refreshing in itself. That, my friends, was IndyCar in 2021. And what a fun time we had. And said it before, it is, like, I sing MotoGP's praises on a regular basis on this show. I will let you in on a little secret. I've already sent my ballot to Jason that IndyCar is my series of the year this year. This was just a fun as hell season to watch and enjoy and witness. And yeah, like, I look forward to the future of the series and the parity that it looks like is coming through, the young talent that now more than belongs, and seeing where the series goes from here, because this was great. I really enjoyed it.
I think one of the other things that made this season really good was just, like, you had, like, the wee side story where when Pato was taken on by Red Bull and Red Bull were trying to figure out how they were going to give him enough points to be an F1 driver, and they sent him to Super Formula. Ooh. And Alex was like, "You speak Spanish, I speak Spanish. Yes!" And there's the story about, like, Pato asking Alex, like, what to do about breakfast, because they all keep eating fish and I don't want fish for breakfast. And he was like, and apparently Alex's solution was, go to a 7-Eleven.
Healthy.
They quickly embrace that combini life over there. It's great. Yeah.
It's great. But it was, and that's the little parts of IndyCar like that is what often makes
and they were,
it so
the two of them were so happy for each other when they were doing well. And even you had, like, when Pato finally got that win at Texas, one of the first people to go and congratulate him was Colton.
The youngsters are nice. It's a nice vibe. So, next week, Formula One, Hamilton and Verstappen beating the shit out of each other. Great!
I'll be there!
And RJ will be there as well. So say hi to RJ if you're going to be at COTA this weekend. Say hi to RJ if you're there already. We mentioned it on Twitter as well, but be there already. It's a doubleheader next weekend. Formula One, the American Grand Prix, the Circuit of the Americas, now with extra bumps. And MotoGP's season continues at Misano. We didn't even really mention this. Valentino Rossi's 44th and final race in Italy.
Yes, and speaking of doubleheaders, the W Series has a doubleheader to end off their year. And right now, their championship is in a dead heat, a tie at the top between Alex Powell and Jamie Chadwick.
Let's go.
Well, at least at least that one driver isn't a nuts heat since she's not able to compete.
Yes. Iris Sidorkova is not going to be there this weekend because she's from the Russian Federation and her visa was denied.
Fucking hell, man. Jesus, that's brutal. Big weekend in motorsport. W Series finale. Formula One at COTA. You know, MotoGP, first championship match point for Fabio Quartararo this weekend. A win at Misano wins him the championship. It is as simple as that. Any finish ahead of Francesco Bagnaia wins him the championship. Also, as mentioned, Valentino Rossi's final race in Italy, which is a strange thing to even say after all these years.
You'll be able to see the flare smoke from space.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there will be... Do not let the attendance limit of 10,000 fool you. Not happening. Like, this is a once-in-a-lifetime event. It is going to be yellow as far as the eye can see in northern Italy. Trust me on this.
This whole time we'll all be there.
Yeah. It's going to be fun seeing all that happen and then Fabio completely piss on the bonfire with his world title celebration if he wins it, which is quite likely. Although Cam Bagnaia did the double to keep the title alive till Portimao. We'll have to wait and see. But yeah, all of that and Formula One at COTA as well. That's bound to be fun because Lewis Hamilton loves COTA. So that's going to be interesting. All of that and will be talked about on next week's show. But thanks for listening to IndyCar Season Review. I've been Dre Harrison. Please, you can find us one more time. YouTube.com/Motorsport101. Facebook.com/Motorsport101. Instagram at Motorsport101Pod. Our personal handles on Twitter at Harrison101HD, at RJ O'Connell, at Ryan Eric King, at WeeZoe. Check out Cam as well at CBuckley917. Website Motorsport101.com. And again, if you want to find all the details on our website, Motorsport101.com, Patreon.com/Motorsport101 as well, if you want to back us financially on there. We'll be back next time. COTA, Misano, it's going to be wild. Until then, I've been Dre Harrison, David RJ O'Connell, and Ryan Eric King. Thanks to our special guest, Zoe Hamilton, as well. Thanks for joining us, as always. Until next time, sayonara.
I am Indy, y'all.
Bye. Honestly, I'm just having the holes and bait ale. Bugger. I'm just happy my wholesome Becky's got all the fried chicken he wants.